This is tape number 0448, with today's message entitled, The Sign of the Prophet Jonah, with Dr. A.E. Wilder Smith.
I'm going to talk to you this morning about the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now, I know quite well that the sign of the prophet Jonah is the sign of the Lord's death and resurrection, that he was 3 days in the belly of the earth, like Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster. Now, let's just have a look and see what the Word of God says about it, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of the problem. Now, the Word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it. Now, that was a very difficult job to do, because Nineveh was a rival of Jerusalem. For their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. If you disobey the Lord, you lose his presence. And that he did. So he went down and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went on board. The abuse of the Lord's funds, wasn't it, that he did that? Because he used the money the Lord had given him to escape from the Lord. And plenty of people do that. They use the money God's given them to distract themselves and escape his presence. So he paid the fare and went aboard to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Emphasized twice. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried to his God. And they threw the wares that were in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep in a storm. So the captain came and said to him, What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call upon your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we do not perish. And they said to one another, Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell upon Jonah. And then they said to him, Tell us, on whose account this evil has come upon us? What is your occupation? And whence do you come? It's like going into the police department, isn't it? What's your occupation? Where are you coming from? Where are you going? What is your country? And of what people are you? Nationality, civil state, married, unmarried. And what of what people are you? And he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord. Do you think he did fear the Lord when he was fleeing from him? Then the men were exceedingly afraid. And I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, What is this that you have done? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. Then they said to him, What shall we do to you, that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. And he said to them, Take me up and throw me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon us. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to bring the ship back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore they cried to the Lord, "We beseech thee, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not his innocent blood on us his innocent blood, for thou, O Lord, hast done as it pleased thee." So they took up Jonah, and 1, 2, 3, they threw him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. In the middle of that storm, they took trouble to make a sacrifice and to make vows to God. Think of that. Less than a storm puts us off sacrificing to the Lord and holding our vows. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. Now that translation, fish, sticks in my throat, because the word for fish is ichthys, and that word isn't used. It's ketos, which is used here. And that's a sea monster, any huge beast living in the seas. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the belly of the fish, saying, "I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and thou didst hear my voice. For thou didst cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood was round about me. All thy waves and thy billows passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out from thy presence. How shall I again look upon thy holy temple? The waters closed in over me. The deep was round about me. Weeds were wrapped about my head. At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet thou didst bring my life up from the pit." The pit here is the stomach in which he is. "O Lord my God, when my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to thee into thy holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their true loyalty. But I, with a voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to thee. What I have vowed, I will pay. Deliverance belongs to the Lord." The prayer from the belly of the fish, of the animal. And the Lord spoke to the fish. Again, the same thing. Poor translation. "And it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land." Now, when I was here 2 years ago and was hindered from carrying it on, I started talking about logos in biology to you. And then I had a little encounter with the neurosurgeon, and I couldn't finish the series off, so I'm going to try, do my best today. He, in his efforts to get me back on my feet again, he took the top of my head off, you see. He operated on the brain, which is quite a little job to do. It's not as bad as the belly of a fish, but it's in the same direction, as you'll see in just a minute. Now, logos and design in biology is our subject this morning, and I'm going to do it with the help of the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now, Jonah was a Jew, of course, and he was given the job of going to Nineveh, which was a nasty job because they were rivals of the Jews. And he said, "Lord, I'm not going." And he went down and misused God's funds to escape the presence of the Lord and paid the fare to Tarshish. And when the men took his money, he went on board and took a ticket for Tarshish. And the storm, which we read about, came up. And God has ways of stopping people fleeing from his presence, because he wants us to be in his presence. He wants us to know his presence every day. Now, the storm came, and as you see, they took him by his hands and his feet, and one, two, three, they sacrificed him to the sea, which was threatening them. And he was swallowed by this sea monster. Now, there are two types of whales. And I'm going to talk about whales because it's probably one type of whale which did the little job for God to stop him from fleeing from doing God's will. The first type of whale I'm going to mention to you is the Mystelocete. That is the whales with a beard or a filter in their mouths, through which they filter the water and take out the krill, the small animals, the crabs and things like that, invertebrates, which they then lick off with their tongue, which in the blue whale is as big as an ox, the tongue, and is heavy as an ox. They lick it off and then they swallow it. And in the blue whale, the stomach can take a ton of krill of that type. You see, it's just simply a huge cavern. And I don't want to talk about the blue whale except to say that the power required to propel that huge monster is over 1,000 horsepower. And it can travel regularly and comfortably at 28 kilometers an hour, which is quite a speed for such a huge fellow. And the blue whale gets as big as 200,000 kilograms. Now, I don't know which type of ton you use in Calvary Chapel, but that would be according to one type of ton, and don't anybody come up to me afterwards with a slide rule and say this is wrong, but it's about 200 tons. When we were going to Europe some time ago, and the children were small, we went on a small 500-tonner freighter from Montreal up the St. Lawrence River through Newfoundland, past the Newfoundland fishing grounds. And when we were out in the Atlantic, we saw a lot of seabirds sitting on something in the water. And the captain of the ship was a nice old man, and he wanted to show us something we hadn't seen before. So he cruised around this huge, what looked like an island in the sea, and it was a blue whale. And it still had the harpoon in its stomach. You could see the harpoon sticking out. It was dead. But to see it was a sight for sore eyes, as you might say. It was beautifully streamlined with little crinkles parallel all along its huge body. And those crinkles, you know, are there to stop the whale in its movement producing turbulence in the water, because the turbulence absorbs horsepower from the tail when the thing is going through water at fair speeds. It can go up to 50 miles an hour, this 200 tonner. Think of that. The amount of fat, rubber, that you have to digest to get a speed on like that is something. It can go regularly at 30 kilometers an hour without turning a hair. It didn't have any hairs, but still, if you might say, it doesn't worry it at all. Now, we cruised round this thing for, oh, I should say, 3/4 of an hour, and had a good look at the mortal harpoon that was stuck in its side. Now, they're incredible size. They're the size of the weight of 28 elephants and 2,000 human heavies, one animal. And when you think they come from one sperm, which is the size of the point of a pin, and one ovum, the size of a pinhead, you think what that means in the way of organization. And you think we can't make our submarines or vessels go through the water with so little resistance as these animals go through the water. That they can do these things that I've told you about is absolutely astounding. Now, I'm going to leave the blue whale and go on to something which you know more about. You know the grey whales that go down the coast here, don't you? They come up from the Arctic and go through the Bering Straits and then all down the Pacific coast of the United States. And about Christmas time, you can see them off San Diego. There are schools that go down, about 40 per school, 40 animals per school. And they migrate every year 20,000 kilometers, almost like birds, you know, they do astounding feats of migration. Now, how do they do it? Well, in the first place, do they do it to go and get more food? Is that why they go out of the Arctic down to the coast of Mexico, San Ignacio? No, they fast the whole journey. Right from the Arctic down to Mexico, they don't eat anything. Well, why do they go if it isn't for food? They go because they know that they're going to get babies. Most of the females on that migration, the adult females, are pregnant. And they're looking for a suitable nursery for the babies that are on the way. And when they get down to Mexico in the shallow, warm waters, the females have their babies, most of them on the same day, so that all grey whales have about the same birthday, because they're born down there at the time they arrive. Now, just think of this. The whale is, of course, a mammal, and it feeds its young on milk. Now, if the whale baby were born by the normal procedure for mammals, it would be born head first. But if it was a breech birth, that is tail first, then you avoid the difficulty that if complications arise during the birth, the head would come out and drown immediately. So that's taken care of by a breech birth. If complications do arise, the baby is still connected by the placenta and the cord to the mother and can stand quite a long, complicated birth. But think of the technical details involved in putting that information onto one sperm, the size of a pin point, and onto one egg the size of a pinhead. You think of the details put there, translated into code form, and then you think this. I don't know whether you're experienced in this, but I'll tell you my experience. If I want to understand a text, any text you like to speak of, say instructions, how to use a machine, the sure way that I know how to understand it and appreciate it, what's in the text, is to translate it into another language. Then you know if you've understood or if you haven't understood. But often when you speak a language, you read over a text, and you might be able to translate it, but it doesn't sink in. But you translate it, writing it down and putting it in code form, and then you do really understand what's in that text. Now you think of writing down in the text on one sperm, DNA text, on one sperm and the DNA text on one ovum, writing down all the details to make those little wrinkles all down the skin of those huge animals, parallel wrinkles, with the purpose of stopping turbulent flow, to make the flow laminar, so that the animal is really streamlined. You think of the information you'd have to write down to do that, and think how small the text is on one sperm and one egg. And then think of this great difficulty, and I'm going to leave the blue whale here and go to the pot whale, which I don't suppose any of you have seen, but they're quite nice little gentlemen. You think of those pot whales, they have jaws like the any other mammal, and they have teeth, but their teeth are so made that they're in the bottom jaw, but they fit into slots on the upper jaw, so that the animal doesn't tear to pieces what it eats. It swallows everything whole. Think of that. And that all written down, all these teeth that fit perfectly into the holes on the upper jaw, all written down on the sperm and the ovum. Now think of this. You know, the Lord who made the great whales, says the scriptures, must have had the idea in his head to do that. And you think of him writing it down in code form in the DNA language, so that when that babe was conceived, all these properties would be there. Therefore, I'm of the opinion, you know, when the Lord made us, he really had to understand the text of what he'd thought out in his thoughts. Because he gives us thought, you know. He had to put all that thought of his into code form, into another language. Therefore, he must have understood what he was doing absolutely consciously and perfectly, because if we're made in his image. You try it. You all speak half a dozen languages yourself, don't you? So you try. If you don't understand a text, say you get these awful instructions on how to use a machine, which I never understand, and put it into another language, you'll notice then if you do really understand it or not. So I'm perfectly sure that the Lord, in his huge intelligence, understood these things doubly well by putting them into another language in code form on the DNA molecule. Now let's leave the blue whale and go on to the grey whales and their little ones that they get down in Mexico. There's nothing to eat there for the whales. It's warm water, and the krill doesn't grow there like it does in the Arctic waters. Now, in order to bring up these little whales, when they're born, they're 1.5 tons heavy. And their tails emerge first of all, but although they're 1.5 tons heavy and they're 4.5 yards long, they haven't got much blubber on them, fat. And you know, if you haven't got much blubber on you, you can't keep warm. So they couldn't be born in Arctic waters because they freeze to death. So they have to be born, and the whale mother has to swim 10,000 kilometers to get the right nursery for her little ones. Now, you think of the difficulty of getting that little one to grow, because it has to eat, you see, and there's nothing much to eat down there. It's a bare shore. Some of you have seen it. Somebody told me in the first service they'd seen that place, and there isn't much to eat. Now, you think, the mother has to suckle that baby underwater. Now, you think of doing that without drowning the baby. So what the mother does, she's so arranged that her teats are let in to her side, to her belly, in such a way that she's perfectly streamlined and you can't see it. But she opens those and she squirts 50 gallons of milk into that baby's mouth. And, you know, the milk is not like that blue miracle you buy in the superstores around here, 2% fat, you know. And it's just because people are afraid of getting too heavy. The milk is 48% fat. And it contains 18% protein. Now, you ought to grow on a dose like that, oughtn't you? And these little babes, they double their birth weight. They double the birth weight in 8 days. And the mother eats nothing all the time. Now, we've had 4 children, my wife and myself. And you know, there's one thing that does make a woman weak, and that is nursing a baby. These mothers do it, and they haven't eaten anything since they came through the Bering Straits. And they've done 10,000 kilometers swimming at 30 miles, 30 kilometers an hour to get down. Now, how do you think the whales know that there's a suitable nursery down there? Because there's nothing to encourage them to go down there. There's no food or anything like that that they might use. They know they need the warmth, and they know they need the shallow water so that they can suckle the babies, just as I told you they did. Now, the mother does that for 6 months. She feeds those babes and eats nothing. Now, you think of the calculation, ladies and gentlemen, that the Creator must have put onto the DNA molecule in the sperm and in the ova of those animals to put it into them to get down to Mexico to feed those children and give them a decent nursery. How did they know in the first place that it was there? Because to find it by chance... Well, if you ask me to believe that, I'll say go and tell it to the Marines. Because 10,000 kilometers is a long, long way, and the world is very big, isn't it, to find a place like that. You think God must have put it into them, and then think of the super compass that these whales have got. They have a compass which measures not only where the North Pole is, but also what latitude you're in, because they can find their way with their internal compass. And so they must measure the dip, the angle dip of the magnetic field of the Earth, so that they can measure longitude and latitude. And with that, they go straight down to the coast of Mexico to get to their nursery. Now you think... If you tell me that an instrument like that, a compass like that, measuring not only where the pole is, but the dip, so that they know the latitude as well, if you tell me That arose by the method which Darwin suggested, that is namely chance, and then natural selection. Those which were right lived and those which were wrong died. You get 99.99% of your animals dying. But who told them in the first place how to use the compass to find the place where they need to go? It's quite small. Find the place they need to go as a nursery for those animals. I think that the wisdom of the Creator passes understanding. You see, the information is written up in code on the DNA molecule. You can read it yourself if you take the trouble, but most people don't take the trouble. They use machines to do it because it's so boring and get out the sequences. But those sequences were all put in there with the idea of having a meaning. Now, the animals, the pot whale, it isn't the grey whale does this, but the pot whale is a toothed whale. The Odontoceti, those whales are called, and they have teeth and jaws just like other animals do. The grey whale is just an example of the whale types. There are 80 types, species of whales, and the two special classes, one with teeth and one without. And the teeth, the toothed whales, are so made that their food is not chewed, but the teeth on the bottom hold it in their mouth, but they don't tear it, because they've got holes in the top jaw so that they can really fix it in their mouth, but they don't tear it like, say, a lion does. It tears its prey to pieces. Now, think of this one. The pot whale is the master diver of all animals on earth. You know what Caisson's disease is. An educated august company like Calvary Chapel knows what Caisson's disease is, don't you? Well, Caisson's disease is diver's disease. Now, you know what happens if you put a bottle of pop in the trunk of your car and you give it a good shake up and then you open it. You know that it goes up to the ceiling, don't you? Because all the gas comes out. Now, if you dive, a man or an animal dives, he gets under very great pressure. At 1,000 meters deep, that's 300 yards deep, he's got the weight on every fingernail of one human heavy per square centimeter. You think of that weight, an enormous weight. And these whales, the pot whale, when he dives, he breathes 10 minutes, and he stores his oxygen not in the lungs but in the myoglobin and the hemoglobin in the blood, and he charges his blood batteries up with oxygen by breathing 10 minutes on the surface, and then he'll dive. And when he dives, he goes straight down at 8 kilometers an hour, straight down, right down to 3,000 meters, 9,000 feet. He goes straight down without stopping. And when he comes straight up without stopping. Now, you know, the diving people who are looking for oil would give their right arms for the ability to be able to do that. As it is, they have to send their divers down, and then when they've been down for a certain time, they have to put them in a decompression chamber, don't they, to let the pressure off gradually. Otherwise, the blood behaves like a bottle of pop, and all the gas comes out, and the arteries and veins are full of gas. And that produces an embolism, which will kill you very, very shortly and destroy the tissue, because it cuts off the circulation of the blood if you get a lot of gas in your blood. So how does a whale do it? It's a physical law that if you put a gas and a liquid under pressure, The greater the pressure, the more gas will go into solution. Those are the gas laws, you know, Henry's gas laws and Boyle's gas laws, and which you learnt them one time, if you haven't forgotten. Okay? Well, now, how does a whale do it? Now, you're going to ask me here something for which my wisdom isn't sufficient. It has in its circulation what is called the rete mirabile, which means the miracle network. And that miracle network in its circulation is a mass of fine vessels which somehow stops the gases from coming out of the blood when the whale goes up after having been at those enormous depths. Now you think, we've been working for years in the laboratory to try and stop gas coming out of the blood when you decompress. The firms, the Shell Company, and those people looking for oil in the, under the sea, would give, as I said, their right eye or their right arm to know how. But that's all put down in one sperm, the size of a pin, and one ovum the size of a pinhead. All the information how to make that rete mirabile is put down in such a small space. Now, if you think that programming to do that happened by chance, I'll say God help you, because I can't. The making of instruments of this type is highest planning and highest design that you can imagine. Now, let's ask ourselves one more question, because it's always good to ask you questions. If you ask questions, people know you're awake, don't they? One of the signs of a human is that the baby starts to ask questions, and then you know it's okay, if it does. Now, why do they dive to these huge depths, the pot whale? What's it got to find down there? It's perfectly black, and there are no plants, because there are no light. There's no light down there. Why do they dive down there regularly, and why are they built to dive? Well, the answer is this. Here, it is food. And the food they want, the special dish which the pot whale likes, are huge octopuses. Now, these octopuses are 8 yards in diameter. And their tentacles are 15 yards, up to 15 yards in diameter. They're giants. And you rarely ever see them because they're so deep in the oceans, you see. And the pot whale dives to those depths and gorges himself on those giants of creation, the octopus. They have caught some time ago a pot whale and counted the number of octopuses in his stomach. And it was 28,000. Now, they weren't all as big as that. There were little fellows and big fellows too. And the thing is, they're not torn to pieces. They're swallowed whole. No doubt about it. We've seen them. So, what are you going to do about that? Well, now, if it was an animal of the type of the pot whale, there's no difficulty. You see, this animal has its blood well charged with oxygen, and the blood supplies the stomach. The atmosphere inside the stomach is oxygenated, so there'd be no possibility there of suffocating to death because you had no oxygen. As long as the animal's got oxygen, you'll have it if you're in his stomach. Okay, that's so far. Now, Jonah, I want to talk about the sign of Jonah now, and I'll have to do some little details on this, otherwise you'll forget me, and in 5 minutes you'll ask me what I've been talking about. So you have to listen to these details. If you get ill when you listen, well, just tell me, put up a white flag, and I'll send Pastor Romaine along with some anti-emetic, you see, to stop you from throwing up. Now look, these animals, as I say, they're built to swallow their prey whole. Their pegged teeth are made for that. Think of all that put on the DNA molecule and the sperm and the ovum. It's all written down there, beautifully designed. That's what I want to get up to. You see, and your schooling system and the university systems here are graded to get people to do damage to their logical systems by saying that instruments can be formed by chance. Instruments, like the compass, like the breastfeeding of these whales, are designed in this way. If you say anything else, I shall have to say no, and we were always taught as children not to contradict. Well, I told my mother, I said, the times when it's better if you do contradict, but I can't swallow that. And yet, the logical system of people, young boys and people going to college, is ruined by telling them that there's no need for a designer. We've got instruments of this degree of perfectness, there's obviously common sense cries out for a designer. Now you think that great designer who made all these things was Jesus. You think of the intelligence to understand how to stop Caisson's disease, Diver's disease. You think of his understanding of physics and of chemistry to do that. And yet Jesus, the Savior, although he had that superb amount of what we call in English gumption, intelligence, to design such things as compasses which will measure the dip angle, to navigate a whale from the Bering Straits right down to Mexico. You think of the contradiction of sinners which he endured in patience. You know, if an ignorant person is maltreated by others, you can understand if he gets ratty and hits out. Jesus, the Creator, the Scripture says, of the great whales, endured the contradiction of sinners to die for me on the cross. You think of such intelligence allowing that to happen to himself without losing his patience. And he set his face as a flint to go to Jerusalem to die for us. It isn't as though he could have avoided it. He could have avoided it if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. He said, how should the scriptures be fulfilled if I don't drink this cup to the dregs? Now that's a measure of love, isn't it? To know as much as he did and to suffer the contradiction of sinners as Jesus did. He must have been so, because think, right in front of the Pharisees who'd certified Lazarus dead and buried him, he spoke a word. That's design. Words carry design in them. And Lazarus came forth, bound with grave clothes. Okay? Think of that. When you know a person, you know, and know their intelligence and still loves them, it signifies much more than if you don't know them. If you know the greatness of Jesus and that he loves us, that signifies infinitely more than if he couldn't have avoided it and just simply went the way of all flesh and died as we all do. But he didn't. He could, at a word, speaking of design, bring a man 4 days dead in front of all these enemies out. And you see, think of all the blind people, when he went blind Bartimaeus, you know, when he went by and started calling out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus said to him, come. And he come, and he said to him, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go and thank God for it. So he followed in the way, and praise God for that. It's the understanding of the miracles which God has done with us that help us to worship him. You can worship him in song, I know that, but real worship doesn't express itself in any physical way. It's a matter of the inner understanding of the mind which loves the Lord for what he is, the creator of all things. Now, I must do one or two practical details. I hope I don't have to call Pastor Romain to help those who are going to get ill, but I have to do it because this is the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now, when Jonah was swallowed with all the octopuses, if that was the animal, I'm not saying it was, but it's a sea monster anyway, and if he was swallowed alive and didn't die, it looks very much as though he's swallowed with an animal, by an animal with pegged teeth, which didn't rip him to bits. When he landed head over heels in that soup of half-dead octopuses, and big ones at that, you know, these huge fellows with tentacles 15 yards long, you know, when they come to your skin, they stick to your skin because they take the air out and they stick on by suction. You think of landing in a soup like that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you shop at superstores, don't you? And you never open a fish's stomach because it's all been taken out for you by people who want to save you the trouble of taking out. Have you ever been fishing and got a nice big trout or a nice big pike and then you have to clean the stomach? You ever done that? It's not nice. Ladies don't like doing it. Because there's one thing about it, you know, a stomach, it doesn't smell like eau de cologne. It's a stench, to use the old Anglo-Saxon word, a stench, and it's filthy. And you can smell it for miles off, especially if it's a fish that's been lying around a bit, and you open the stomach. Now you think of poor old Jonah, head over heels, straight into the beak of a half-dead octopus. Now you think, he wasn't dead because he wasn't bitten. He was alive. And he was alive enough to pray. Some people, even when they're alive, don't pray, you know. Anyway, he was in that situation. He said, out of the belly of Sheol I called to thee. Now you think this. What kills those animals then, or the people, in such a beast's stomach? Well, they get digested by strong digestive juices. Now think of Jonah landing in a soup like that. Strong digestive juices, octopuses, and the arms still moving if you touch them. Now you think of the yielding floor. Because you see, all the floor that he was standing on was the floor of dead, half-dead animals. And you think of him trying to crawl out the way he came in, and all the yielding, slimy tissues that surrounded him. Now, I want to get this quite clear, don't you? Don't you misunderstand me? You think of the Sheol into which that poor man had got, and he got into that mess because he was fleeing the presence of the Lord. And this was the Lord's answer to that. And you know, I often think that the atmosphere in some families, even Christian families, oh yes, even some Christian families, is as thick as perhaps the atmosphere in Jonah's animal that swallowed him. You know, they say you cut it with a knife, the atmosphere was so thick. Dad was just having a go at Mum, you see, when he came in, and I once had it in Stockton-on-Tees during the war. I lodged with an old sea captain, and he was a pious old man. But his wife was a sharp-tongued old lady, my landlady. And during an air raid, there were a number of bombs fell on stops and on T's that night, and we heard them coming, you know, boom, 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 and you wonder where the next one's going to fall. And I came into the house just as the last one fell, and she didn't hear me. But she was shrieking at her husband just as I came in. And she tried to turn, because she had great respect for me, I don't know why, but she did. And she turned that shriek into a laugh, or tried to. You've never heard anything so incongruous in all your life. And she did that. Well, now, that poor old man, he lived in the stomach of some sea monster. The atmosphere was terrible. Terrible. Well, anyway, Jonah, even when the situation was as bad as that, you think of the digestive juices getting onto his eyelids and getting onto his lips and dissolving off his ears. Because you see, the ears are soft and they'll be attacked by... If you can dissolve an octopus, you can dissolve the ears. And think of him in that situation, and he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord heard him out of his situation in his holy temple. Now think of Jonah praying. If you pray, you want to help yourself as well, don't you? So you think of him trying to climb up the esophagus where he'd come in head over heels. And all the walls yield, you see. There's nothing firm on which you can get a grip. Now, you know this, that before you... You mustn't be ill at this. Before you throw up, do you notice that you start to swallow? You must swallow your saliva just before you're going to throw up. If you eat a lot of garlic, I can tell you that's one way of doing it. And... Okay, all right, I'll finish it off, but this is quite important. Now, if he did start to do that and try to come up, you see, the swallowing reflexes of the fish, of the animal, would start and shove him down again. That's what happens if anything disagrees with your stomach. The swallowing reflexes start, and that's prior to vomiting. So it says the Lord spoke to the animal, and he vomited him out onto dry land. Okay? Wonderful. Now you think of Jonah. This is the sign of Jonah. You think of Jonah coming out of a mess like that onto the seashore, where the wind's blowing, and there's plenty of water to wash off the remains of the tentacles of the octopus round about him, and to clean himself up, have a real good shower, you see, on the seashore. You think of the birds calling after that awful darkness and stillness in that stomach. You think of Jonah coming out of the whale, and you'll know what it's like to be reborn. He was reborn. His life started again because he said, I will keep my vows to thee. He stopped fleeing the presence of God and came out into the fresh air where the gulls were calling and the sun was shining, out of pitch blackness and stench. So you had to hold your nose. That's the sign of the prophet Jonah. He came out of the pit of death into the Son of Life. And that's a true picture of the nature of the new birth. Living, fleeing from the presence of the Lord is followed by consequences such as Jonah had. Okay. Right. Now you think of all the wounds on his face as he washed them with salt water. Good way of sterilizing, getting clean, isn't it, after such an experience? But the washing of the water of the Word does to us what the seawater did to Jonah when he came out of the whale, out of the fish, out of the sea monster. That's what the washing of the water of the word does. Now therefore, I think this, which you know, family life is very, very wrong and lacking if we don't take care to wash ourselves daily with the holy word of God. That alone will tell us what sin is, and sin is living without the presence of Jesus. And if we can get that away, then life is new. But it's the life of a man who was dead, and see, he's now alive. That's the true Christian picture of the nature of the new birth. Now, let's see what it did, because this is the great sign of Jonah, which works even today. You know, when he went into the city and preached to the people there, they went straight to the king and said, "Oh king, we've got a man with a message for us." And the king sent for him. And you know, when he saw Jonah come in with his parboiled face, and perhaps the lobes of his ears lacking, and his eyelids attacked, you know what parboiled means, don't you? Half cooked. When he came in, they believed him. But you see, the world, if we don't look like Jonah looked, don't take any notice of us at all. You can preach to angels, you know, and they don't listen. But if you have a man who has all the signs of death to himself upon him, and life towards God, newness of life, they'll listen to that, because they're living in whales' bellies themselves, and here's a man who knows it and can explain it to others. And you see, he convinces, because his way of life is just that way. It looks as though he's come out of a fish's belly. He's got the marks of death on him. And that's the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now I know it's a sign also of Jesus' resurrection, that's clear to me. But the practical side is this, that when the world sees and hears a man who's got the signs of death upon him, death to himself, and doesn't only please himself all his life, they'll listen to him, because that's what they want.
So this is the end of side two and the end of this cassette. If you would like more information, please write Chapel Tapes, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. God bless you.